It's Song Talk Radio.
Welcome to Song Talk Radio, the show with songwriters talking to other songwriters about the craft of songwriting. We share tips, tools, and techniques, and together we all become better at writing songs. Dialing in from our headquarters in Toronto, I'm Neil Modi, and with me, my usual co-host, Phil Emery. How you doing, Phil?
I'm calling in from St. John's, Newfoundland, and I'm happy to be back. It's been a few weeks, actually, since we've actually done the show together, due to various snafus and life situations. But it's great to be back, and looking forward to talking about some song talk nerdery.
Awesome. Yeah, that's what we're here for, and great to have you back, Phil.
Yes.
It's been a quick summer, I'll be honest, as usual.
Yeah,
that's the way it goes, though. All right. And for everyone else, please send your comments and questions to at Song Talk Radio on Facebook or Instagram, or feedback at songtalk.ca for the email, and we'll share your thoughts on the show. And please visit songtalk.ca to see the show post for this episode, find links to resources we mention, and to download lyric and chord sheets to follow along with the songs that we feature. Tonight, we're very happy to welcome Canadian singer-songwriter David Leask to the show. How are you doing, David?
I'm doing fine. Thanks, Neil. Nice to be here. Hi, Phil.
Hello.
Great to have you on the show, David. And before we get to David's song, just another reminder about our songwriting challenge for 2025 is to write a song in an odd time signature. And of course, the resource page on songtalk.ca, you can check out past episodes and all sorts of interesting tidbits and get yourself learned up about odd time signatures. We have set the deadline for our listener songs. Please send in your songs to us by November the 10th, 2025, and include an MP3 of your song, a lyric sheet with chords ideally, and a paragraph or two about your songwriting process and how you tackled this challenge. And happy to say we've already received two entries into our challenge now, which is awesome, which is a good kick in the butt that I need personally to get started on mine.
Yes. Well, it's so easy because we're doing the show literally every week. And, with the editing, it feels sometimes like it never ends. We sort of forget to write songs sometimes, which is sort of odd, especially when you're doing the meetup as well. But Heather will be going away for a whole month soon. So I will have time to work on the song. So
right on. Yeah.
Yes.
That's always a good way to look at it. You got to squeeze in some time between now and then.
When you can, too. Yes.
Yeah, great. Okay, on to the main event. Award-winning Scots-Canadian singer-songwriter David Leask is a celebrated writer and performer known for his emotionally resonant songwriting, soulful voice, and deep musical craftsmanship that flows freely between genres. Throughout his three-decade-long career, Leask has performed over 3,000 shows and earned accolades across multiple genres. Described by SoCan's Word and Music magazine as an artist who has immense respect from his peers, Leask's lengthy list of awards and recognitions include a Mississauga Performing Artist of the Year Award and Mississauga Music's 2023 Songwriter of the Year Award, while also garnering international songwriting awards and national acclaim. His 2020 album, Voyager in Song, was inspired by the storied six-string Nation guitar, a custom guitar made up of four individual pieces of Canadian historical artifacts. And we're going to be talking to David tonight about his song, When I Become Confused. And remember, you can find the lyric sheet on the show post at songtalk.ca to follow along.
But before we do, I just want to point out, while you're listening to the song, listen to the chords at the end of the verses. They're really, really sweet. They're really, the way they set up the next bit is really, really worth noting. So take a listen, pay attention to the ends of the chords of the verses. Very good. Here we go.
Cool.
When I become confused, no longer get the news, and the bridge between synapses collapses, words fall through, all the yellows turn to blues. When I back home confused, and all the ways and winds start sitting on the fence, and the touchstones of time get buried inside no beginning, no end. A disappearing point of view when I become inside this shell. Before you bid me farewell, remember I'm still here, and as long as you're near, I'd love to be held. And I'll sing my way through when I become confused.
Yeah, I love how the last chord doesn't resolve.
Yeah,
it's just open. It's so nice. He just, in fact, I was sitting there waiting, going, "Does it resolve? No, it doesn't." So,
no. It's like, where's the one? We gotta go back to the one.
Choices. Yeah.
So beautiful chords. I wanted to talk about. So definitely not first position major chords. Can we talk about what kinds of extensions you're using?
You know, before that, Phil, I'd just like to give a little bit of backdrop just in terms of the song and where it came from, which is part of the process in terms of writing it, and then I'll get to the chords. So it was a poem from an old school chum who had the title When I Become Confused, whose mother had gone through Alzheimer's, and I was living with my in-law who also had Alzheimer's. The song idea came when I was actually touching down on a plane coming back from a UK tour. And so the confusion was a major part of it. And I think you were alluding to at the beginning there, that chord at the end of the verse. And that's the confusion chord. And, you know, how that happens is... I think it's very much a spontaneous thing, but you know you've landed on something that encapsulates the song when you hit that diminished chord there. But I think what you're also seeing is at the end of the next verse, it went back to the one. And that was the setup for what I would say is the bridge part, which if we were to just stick on even talking about that diminished chord, when there's the descending part that's... building to the solo, I slipped in that diminished chord just before the five chord. And so, you know, I'm not a technical writer, I'm an instinctive writer, but you know, when you put these things in, they have an emotional effect, almost like a prosody effect, that they're marrying with the lyrics, the word confusion. And oftentimes I'll do these things, then I'll look back and go, that's why it's working. That's why it's working. So, you know, you guys are probably way more adept and have analyzed way more songs than me. And I'm more living in a mysterious world, and I'll try and decode what you ask me. But quite frankly, I'm kind of comfortable living in the mysterious sense of where songs come from and how things happen or how they don't happen.
Yeah. Yeah, because it does have that kind of that kind of feeling about you say when I become confused and then you hit that diminished chord. It's like the tension high point of the verse.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It really kind of it sounds a little bit mangled and then quickly comes back down to earth, right? Which is really, really nice. And the prosody thing about, you know, the lyric and the thing lining up, and you know, we often look at that and go, oh, that was very, you know, quote unquote clever, which means, in other words, that it was well thought out and it was deliberate.
but not necessarily,
right?
Yeah.
Which is very cool. But what I want to ask you about too is that you this is a co-write, yourself and Robert Keeler.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about the collaboration there?
Yeah, well, it's very unusual. I was on tour in the UK. I was playing the second last show up in Aberdeen, where Rob lives in Scotland. And Rob and I went to school together and probably known each other since we were maybe 10 years old. And Rob had written this poem and he mentioned it to me. And as I say, I said, send me the poem. You never know what it might stir. So I essentially took the title and a couple of other lines, particularly the last verse, as I sink inside the shell before you bid me farewell. He had it slightly differently. And then there was another line where he was talking about his hard drive not working. And I kind of twisted that around to when the synapses collapsing, you know, like
that was nice.
He
inspired
nice
that line because of his language, but I put it in my own language. So I basically wrote the thing and then sent it to him. And, you know, he was obviously over the moon with it, but it's not like we were in the room together. But it was such a powerful catalyst because he'd lived it in his world and I was living it in my world. So that was the essence of the collaboration.
So it was kind of a remote thing then, wasn't it?
Very much remote.
So you started off with the lyrics.
I mentioned that the plane was coming into Toronto and I've still got the recording, and it's a crazy recording because you can hear the plane sound and it's just about to touch down. And I took that line and I said, well, I become confused, no longer get the news. So I created the melody essentially for the chorus as the plane was touching down in Toronto. And over the next month, I worked at it, but I wrote it on guitar. There's another interesting thing. So it wasn't written on piano. And the session, we hired Aaron Davis to play piano, and Aaron turned up and Aaron thought I was going to be playing guitar, but Justin Abedin, who co-produced with me, we had the idea it would just be piano with all the space that he wanted. So that was a whole different approach. So he had a lot more freedom, and I think that freedom served to essentially let him interpret some of the mood and the emotion of what the lyric was saying, which he's a genius, you know, I mean, so he did a lot of that, but I mean, the chords were mapped out. It's just that, you know, subtly he might have changed some voicings here and there.
So when you wrote it on guitar, like, did you have that diminished chord? Did you have all the extensions?
I wrote it in an open tuning actually with a
diminished. Oh, really? Okay.
Open tunings are great. I always forget, like I've used them, but I always forget them.
Yeah. I love the overtones and harmonics. You'll hear, they trigger different melodies. I mean, in terms of songwriting tips, sometimes, you know, I'll jump from playing a song in standard and then I'll play it in open tuning. And there's like this sort of renewed sense of harmonic and where the melody should go in relation to even overtones from an open tune guitar versus a standard. Same if you go to the piano, you know, you're voicing things in different registers.
Yeah, and well, for sure. So when you perform a song live, then is it piano or guitar?
Guitar, yeah. I did a live thing for CHTV and I did it on guitar, yeah.
Okay, does that surprise your fans? if they heard the recording, then...
you know, people have mentioned it, but it's an intimate song. I mean, that's the way you want to do it. So, I mean, the production's very intimate and... on the recording, but when I play it with dynamics with the guitar, the diminish is still there. It still has all the feeling of confusion at that point. So yeah, it still works.
I mean, the piano performance is quite astounding. It is so wonderful.
Yeah.
You know,
Yeah.
Yeah, it's wonderfully detailed, and it still supports the song beautifully. Like it's heavily involved. It's a lot of notes.
Absolutely, right? You're right.
But yeah. But it still supports the song. It's really quite.
Well, yeah, because there's a sense of crazy. I mean, if you imagine what's going on in someone's head when their brain's changing, he almost manages at the right points in the song to interpret when that's kind of going off the deep end, and your unresolved chord at the end is just. It's kind of just still swimming and you don't know where that confusion is going to go. So, yeah.
That's a great tip. You know, it's if we write a song and, you know, everyone sort of plays everything now because of technology, it can be worthwhile giving your track to someone who's like a really good piano player because they can bring so much more to it than you can just because they know how to use the tool a bit better.
Yeah.
I have a couple of pieces that I played on piano and it's just I've never... They don't quite sit right, even if you like, try to quantize them, they just don't have the right performance.
I think you have to have the feel for the lyric too. And it's storytelling, really. I mean, it's not just the lyrics that are telling the story. It's, it depends on who the individual is too, you know. They might have a different way of telling the story that might be slightly more aggressive or whatever. So, yeah, it's a fascinating part, the production part, to see where your song goes. And again, as a singer-songwriter, when you're in the studio, you have to be able to say, I don't like that.
Right.
I don't want you to do that. As opposed to, you're amazing. And,
just accept it. Yeah.
Like it's an artistic voice and a songwriting voice, to be honest with you. I mean, you write songs and, you know, it's Lanois, I think, that said, you know, like when you write a song, what you want to do is really in the production, take an oral photograph that captures the emotion of where the song came from. Mm-hmm. And like, but it's the songwriter that tends to know what that is. So yeah, it's this weird journey where it takes you through many fields and thorns and oases before you get where it's supposed to crystallize and be its real self.
Yeah, beautiful result. I'm really fascinated by the rhyme scheme in this song because it's like confused news, synapses collapses through, blues confused. So it's like A-A-B-B-A-A-A, which is a really unusual chord progression, but it supports the lyric in the sense that it takes you on this journey. It sort of takes a turn, comes back. You know, and then, like you said, with that chord shift at the end, where the rhyme suggests that it would come to some kind of a resolution, it doesn't because of the music, and then it only comes back in the next verse or resolves within the next verse. Is this a typical sort of structure for you? Like this is essentially verse, verse, bridge, verse structure. Like there's taglines, but there's no chorus per se.
I don't know if I have such a thing as typical. I mean, I wrote in Nashville, you know, I went to Nashville and wrote a couple of weeks a year. And, you know, it's very much the progression there is, you know, verse, verse, chorus, verse, chorus, bridge. Although some people interrupt and go for their lunch before the bridge. So you put lunch in there, then the bridge, and then the chorus. Yeah.
Yes.
So, you know, you tend to in that genre, right?
Or was there something in the original poem that suggested the structure?
No. I mean, I to be honest with you, phonetics are such a powerful thing for me. So when I'm hearing the phonetic sounds, they're driving structure to some sense, but they're driving melody. Sometimes, you know, just to push things where you think a line should end as a predictable line. And again, it depends on what you're feeling and what subject matter is and what you're trying to get across as a message. It's good sometimes just to extend a line so people are expecting that line to finish and then, you know, it goes on a little bit longer. It's interesting, you were talking about the weird time signatures. I've written two songs that are weird time signatures. One is in 7/4 and one is in 5/4. Mm. And one of the magic things I find about that is when you can run the phrasing over the time signature at the end of the bar. So it becomes fluid that people are not even aware that it wasn't 8, it was only 7 beats in that bar. And, you know, it's about trying to create that flow and fluidity, which, it's very much an instinctive thing, but you know, there's something new and original about it, but it's almost like with the attention spans the way they are nowadays, I've been playing this song Talking Away out live a lot, and it was on my
first record
in 1997, and I find it's just, people are just really gravitating towards it. It's almost like that little hiccup is just grabbing people because they don't quite know what's happened. And, you know, it's, everything becomes very predictable if we're 8 and 8 and 4 and 4 and everything's here. So, yeah. but not such a hiccup that it sounds like a mistake, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's the trick really is doing it weird without it sounding weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Cool. Weird.
Cool. Which like you say, like, I mean, you know, it's intuitive, but it's, at the same time, like I think back to earlier songs that I wrote when I first started out and I look back at them and go, the melodies were clunky. There was no flow, like you say, right? There was no sort of nice, easy going about it. It was kind of, it was clunky. It's like the only word I can just describe it, right? And then, but now I'm better at it. So it kind of, you know, intuitively feels better to just do it.
I think it's the more songs you write, the more you feel it's more natural and
It's a very tight song. Mm-hmm. Like it's only 3 minutes.
Yeah.
But I could see this working really well in a live situation where people could do solos over that rich musical chords. Could you actually go over the chords for the verse?
Off the top of my head.
It's always tough.
I'm terrible for... if my producer was here, you would say that was like for in the key D. This is actually E flat, but I play it in open D. So, you know, it would be a B minor 7, maybe add 4 off the top of my head, but that's probably wrong. A G.
Is there a lot of borrowing of chords going on, or is it all? It's not all within one key, is it? It's kind of a modal thing, it seems.
Yeah. It's more of a modal thing. I mean, there's passing chords, you know, the G running down with the D over the F sharp to the E minor. But as to all those voicings, I don't have them in my head. I play them, but I never really truly think about. Yeah. You know, which I'm adding. And that's the nature, perhaps, of me being a live player who I might play different from one night to the next. You know, sometimes it might be a straight minor, other times it might be a minor 7. But, that I love the sound of the diminished. I love the drama. Finding the right place for it is the key.
Yeah, and you're not using it, like typically in a more of a pop song context, if you're going to use a diminished chord, chances are it's a passing chord, but you're lingering on it. Like you're keeping us there for a second, right? It's a key moment in the song.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's kind of fascinating to hear that in that context, to be like, whoa, no, we're gonna stick here for a second before we come back. It's really nice.
Also, when you write in an open tuning, sometimes you're not really sure what you're doing because you're just putting your fingers down and what's that, which is why it's so good, because you're not actually second guessing yourself. You're just putting your fingers down and going, that sounds good.
Yeah.
As opposed to sometimes when you get into writing songs, you're thinking, oh, I'm going to the 1 to the 5, maybe a little to the 3. And there's that sort of, you know, we always talk about the head and the heart. Sometimes the head gets into it too much. So doing an open tuning really helps, although it's harder to do on piano, I guess.
You'd have to disconnect all the strings and do something. I don't know.
Well, it's and interesting.
Then for those of us using electric pianos, like, I don't know what you would do.
there's a piano player who played my first record and my second record, Jonathan Goldsmith. And apparently Jonathan, on his, he used to retune the piano. So it was like so it was kind of open tune, so it wasn't traditional. So he could experiment with that, and
I'm a piano player, and that would just break my brain, I think.
Yeah.
He might have done it so that the piano would be in tune in key, because even tempered pianos, the thirds are often like 5% flat or something like that. When you really listen to it, there's sort of like these beats. But if you retune that to like one single key, it does sound a lot sweeter.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. But then you can only play in that key. Like, good luck borrowing chord or doing any chromaticism. Like, forget about it. Because then it'll sound really, really dissonant. But I mentioned this on a podcast a while back about the new keyboard controller I got, Native Instruments, A61 keyboard controller. And it's got this scale function by which you can select in software, you can select any mode, any scale you want, and then you just play the white keys. And I couldn't use it because I'm like playing, you know, a C to an A on the white keys, and I'm hearing a C to an A flat. And it would make my brain break. Like, it literally broke my brain. I can't do this. I cannot work with this.
That's one way to become confused, that's for sure.
That I could lend the confusion. But it always, I mean, as a piano player, I don't play guitar. If I play guitar, it's like too open form or open position chords really badly. So open tuning, forget about it. But that always fascinates me when I hear that someone's used open tuning, or when I hear an open tuning song, because it totally puts your brain in a different space, doesn't it? Like, it's really
I think the other thing, I'm might have been touching on this with the overtones, but and Phil, you were talking about it too, is you can put your finger somewhere, and because the nature of being open, even with two fingers, all six strings are working, but with all these different notes that you would not normally have. So it might be a minor, but as I say, it might have an add four, an add six, or a nine or whatever. And that sounds beautiful. But if you're writing a song that needs a clear message, all of that is kind of sometimes getting in the way of a clear melody and a clear lyric. And I've found that, I play songs a lot of times in both when I'm live, and I go, that didn't work in open tuning. It was too cluttered. It was too busy.
Too much stuff.
And it lost space for the melody, and it lost space for the message to come across. And I think this is where you've got to watch when it's to your benefit, or whether it's...
Yeah, I've even found that as a composer on piano, if I'm working on a collaboration with someone who's even done a top line, for instance, and has asked me to do some piano stuff, and I listen to the melody and I listen to the lyric, and sometimes I'll go the way of sevenths and nines and suspendeds and stuff, and sometimes I'll be like, no, this just wants to be major minor.
That's right.
And somehow it just feels right in one or the other language, you know. It's interesting.
It's a powerful thing, this music stuff.
Oh, yeah. The notes you choose matter. Yeah.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. It is a fantastic, beautiful, beautiful tune.
Yeah.
Really
stunning. Yeah. All right. I'm here in the band. I think that's about all the time we have on the show today. So this has been Song Talk Radio. Special thanks to David Leask. And where can our listeners find out more about you and hear some more of your music?
At davidleask.com is the hub. Straightforward, LEASK.com.
Perfect. David Leask. All right, we'll send our listeners there. There'll be a link on the show post for this. So we want to hear from you too. So please send your comments on Facebook or Instagram to @songtalkradio, or send us an email, feedback@songtalk.ca. Also, be sure to check out our YouTube channel for live performance videos and full episodes, and subscribe today to the Song Talk Radio podcast on your favorite podcast provider. And please support us at our Patreon page. You can visit songtalk.ca/support. Thanks to everyone who has supported us so far.
Thank you.
You can find links to all the products, books, and web services we mentioned on the show in our resources page on the website. And please visit us at our next monthly Song Talk meetup. Whether you're in Toronto for our in-person meetups, or anywhere in the world for our online meetups, it's free to join on Eventbrite and free to attend. Bring a song and a lyric sheet and get constructive feedback from other songwriters. Stop by songtalk.ca for the link. You can follow me at neilmodi.com. You can follow Phil
PillarMarie.ca.
And David, what's your favorite social media channel? Where do you post the most?
Probably Facebook. Yeah, David Leese Music, at David Leese Music.
Cool. Okay, be sure to follow David there. And be sure to stop by the website, songtalk.ca, to browse past shows and find out how you can be a guest. Thanks for tuning in, and
keep on writing. Good night.